Thousands of Hungarians have taken to the frigid streets of Budapest over the last 5 days to protest the government of far-right Prime Minister Viktor Orbán. Two new laws incited the protests. Citizens are calling one a slave labor law because it forces employees to work up to 400 hours of overtime a year with delayed payment. The second law establishes a parallel judicial system run by the executive branch of the government. But the protests have grown to represent broader dissatisfaction with the Hungarian government and its attempts to suppress coverage of this uprising. On Monday, four opposition lawmakers were violently thrown out of the state television building for trying to broadcast a petition. Patrick Kingsley has been on the ground reporting on this situation every step of the way, and he's an international correspondent for the New York Times, and he joins us now. Patrick, thanks for taking the time.
Thanks for having me on the show.
So first, can you tell us the two new laws, how did they lead to these protests?
Well, last Wednesday, the government tried to push these through parliament without any debate, and that really angered the opposition MPs in the Hungarian parliament. They tried to stop the passage of those laws, not by voting against them because they don't have a majority, but by essentially civil disobedience inside the parliament, blowing whistles, obstructing the passage to the speaker's chair. And they broadcast this using Facebook Live on their Facebook feeds. And that seemed to ignite something among a few thousand ordinary Hungarians who also don't like what's going on. They were particularly angered by the so-called slave law that increases the amount of overtime each Hungarian worker has to do each year. And that became the initial focus, as you said, of the protests. People came out, protested outside Parliament three nights in a row, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday last week. And it sort of grew and grew. On Sunday, there was a much larger protest of around 15,000 people, some of whom later, in sub-zero conditions, marched through the snow to the state media broadcaster on the edge of town. And some of the people in that march were opposition lawmakers, and they entered the building, as is their right as lawmakers, and tried to get the editors of the state media program to let them on TV to talk about why there was all these protests and to make some demands of the government. They had an all-night standoff starting on Sunday night, ending on Monday morning, and it ended with those lawmakers, or some of them at least, being physically thrown out of the state media headquarters, in one case carried and thrown out through a side door.
Patrick, what can you tell us about the protesters themselves? Who are they?
They're a real range, actually. It's quite striking. You've got people from leftist parties, centrist parties, even a far-right party. It's a real political mix. That's quite unusual, because one reason why Orbán has been so strong over the last 8 years is that the opposition has stayed so fragmented. But we've just seen some shoots of unity in the last week, which has had observers remarking that if this could continue come the European elections next spring, the elections for the European Parliament.
So how is Orbán's government responding to these growing protests?
They're basically trying to ignore it. That's why the state media, state broadcasters, wouldn't let the opposition lawmakers onto their shows. They are trying to paint them in private media as provocateurs, as foreign agents, agents of George Soros, trying to suggest that these are not actual Hungarians, that these are foreigners who have come to stir up trouble, and that no Hungarian in their right mind would really be opposed to Mr. Orbán.
And yesterday you tweeted that with the assaults of four MPs, the Orbán regime has, quote, crossed a threshold that it previously dared not cross. Can you explain that for us?
Well, I think it's a new moment for Hungary, because for the past 8 years, Viktor Orbán has done many things that you might describe as tinted with authoritarianism, infringing the judicial independence, stacking the constitutional court with his loyalists, gradually taking over both state and private media, and putting his own allies in charge of most of what are supposed to be independent state institutions. What he hasn't done in all these 8 years is do anything that strays into naked displays of violence against his opponent. What we saw on Monday means that we've gone into a different realm now, because we had four opposition lawmakers in slightly different contexts get roughed up, and one of them actually hospitalized. And so that takes us from a slightly intangible sense of authoritarianism into a very egregious display of political violence against the opponents.
And overall, what about Hungary's relationship with the European Union at this point? What's the status there?
Well, over the past 8 years, the commission that runs the European Union has tried various different measures to rein in Viktor Orban. But ultimately, the EU is not set up to deal with someone like Mr. Orban, who is trying to sort of rein in Hungarian democracy after the country has already entered the European Union. The Union doesn't have the mechanisms to deal with someone like that. So ultimately, the Commission has been not very effective in dealing with him. A couple of months ago, the European Parliament, which is a separate institution within the European Union, voted to begin a kind of sanctions procedure against Mr. Orban. But ultimately, that is again another sort of more symbolic gesture than anything else. And so we've been left with a situation where the European Union, which is nominally a union of democracies, faces a country within its midst, Hungary, that has experienced a great degree of democratic backsliding in the last 8 years, and the union has been unable to do much about it.
Patrick Kingsley is an international correspondent for The New York Times. Patrick, thanks again for your reporting.
Thank you.